I'm John Eslon, and this is This Week in APA.
Podcast, I have interviewed quite a few interesting people with interesting careers. Heck, I've interviewed Major League Baseball players. Jim Cott came on the podcast, and I had a chat with him. We've interviewed David Eisenhower, the grandson of Dwight D. Eisenhower, a former president of the United States. We've had writers. We've had baseball broadcasters. I interviewed broadcasting Hall of Famer Marty Brenneman on the podcast, sports writers, Paul Dougherty, and again, as I said, people that have written books. But today's guest, another very interesting guy who has ties to the APA community. His name is David Macias. He's been playing APA since he's been 19 years old, and he plays in one of the longest-running APA leagues in existence, the Down Under Baseball League. And he's going to tell us about that and how he got started with APA. And I got to say that he is one of the most interesting careers that I've known an APA enthusiast to have. And he's going to talk a little bit about that as well. So, and before I go any further, I want to say that some of the content is shocking and may be disturbing to some of the APA community. Why? Because David refers to APA as APBA, and I know that is offensive to a lot of you APA devotees out there, but hey, that's just the way he refers to the game company, APBA. We know it's APA, but hey, let him do his own thing, right? Let him be him and you be you. Anyway, without further ado, here's my conversation with David Macias.
Hi, David. How are you doing this morning?
Good, John. How are you?
I am great. I know that for you it is very early. It's 7:30 a.m. West Coast time. You live in California. And really, I appreciate you getting up. And you say you're up and at 'em pretty early every day.
Yeah. And believe me, it's, although I do have a good work ethic, it's not just that. I'm in my late 50s now, and I pretty much just wake up at 6 o'clock, no matter what time I went to bed. I'm just at that stage of life.
Yeah, I'm a little bit older than you, and I know exactly what you're talking about. But anyway, still early there. It's early here for me even a little bit, but let's get into the conversation. I think you have a very interesting story, and of course, APA kind of evolves in that. Let's talk about, like I do with all my guests, your APA beginnings. When did you get introduced to the APA game company?
Well, that would be in 1984, I believe. I was working in a game store, and I was sort of the sports game enthusiast there. I played a lot of status pro baseball as a teenager and status pro basketball. I was, you know, pretty heavily into a lot of the Avalon Hill games. I noticed one day a note on the board by from a gentleman named Randy Alton, who is I'm still in the league with and is a friend to this day. But he posted a note saying that they needed a manager for an APBA league. And I was like, well, I don't know what APBA baseball is, but I'd love to find out. And so I called him and got introduced to the game, and we were in a league together for a few years. And then he was in another league, and I joined that league. Well, the first league that we were in kind of imploded, but that was the beginning. It's all due to Randy Alton.
Yeah, and the league, I think one of the leagues you're talking about is the Down Under Baseball League, correct? Better known as the Double.
Yes, I joined that league two years into my APBA career, so that would probably be about at 21, and I'm still in the league today. So 36 years later.
Yeah, that league is in its 45th season right yep. now. And that's how we actually met. I met you about 4 years ago at one of your conventions here in Northern Kentucky. And we had a chance to chat and talk a little bit about your double convention, because it's very interesting in a way, you know, usually people have, you know, that are in leagues have, you know, draft day, they go and draft, they try to get together, and then they play their games throughout the year until they come to the conclusion. But you guys do it a little bit differently. Tell us about that.
Well, we love each other's company so much that we will sometimes, we'll, you know, there are groups of us that get together on draft day and all the normal things. But what we'll do is we'll have a yearly convention, and anywhere there's 28 teams in the Down Under Baseball League. My guess is around 16 or 17 of those teams, those managers, will get together in June of every year, and we'll just play our faces off. We just get together in a hotel ballroom. I'm sure there's interesting things going on in the city, but we don't really know. We don't really care. We just from morning, noon, and night, just sit there and roll games and BS about baseball and just enjoy one another's company. And it's a grand old time, as you got to witness a little bit.
I did. And first of all, I had to see it because a good buddy of mine and a good friend of the show, Kent Kraft's a part of the league. And he said, I said, well, what happens with these things? He goes, well, we just get together and roll games. I'm saying, oh, what? Like maybe you play a few series. You guys play sometimes up to 100 games of the season.
Yeah. My personal record is I got there early and left late, and I played 110 games out of our 165 game schedule right there. Well, wow. I mean, it's better if you can, you know, play them face to face and you get the excitement of the game. And, you know, we'll play online. We, you know, have a very, a lot of trust in the league. If somebody's got to roll the home games, not online or whatever, we trust everybody to do that. But it's more fun, you know, doing it face to face. And it's a highlight of everyone in the league's year. In fact, I have never, you know, pandemic notwithstanding, I have never missed a convention in 36 years. I plan never to.
Yeah, it looked like a whole lot of fun. I mean, a bunch of guys there, a lot more than I expected to come and roll baseball all weekend. But I got to talk to probably about a half a dozen of the guys there, and it really was a great time. And kudos to you guys for playing that many games in a weekend. It's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's well, put it this way. I don't think at this stage in my life, my body would even let me get in 110 games. I'm sure that was probably when I was in my 30s or something. So,
right. Well, just keep on rolling. Obviously, you play APA baseball. Did you get into any of the other APA sports?
Yes, actually, I am a fanatic about APA football as well. I'm a pretty recent convert. I'd always wanted to get it. And then during when the pandemic started and I was going to have some time that I needed to entertain myself at home, I went ahead and just went all in. And I'm a big college football fan. I mean, I love the NFL too, but I'm a bigger college fan. And so I ordered the entire college football set from the previous season. I think it was 81, teams and played a single elimination tournament so that I could have played every single, you know, team at least once. And from that point, I was just hooked. I think for gameplay, I hope I'm not blaspheming to my baseball brethren out there, but I think in terms of gameplay, I actually enjoy the football game a little more as a game, but I just, you know, I love the baseball as well, but I'm pretty fanatical about the football game.
Well, the football game does have a great engine, and I'm starting to learn it little by little because I'm like you, a huge baseball fan, but kind of want to dabble into the football as well. You say you're more of a college football guy, And I know you have a couple of different homes. I know you have one in California. You do a lot in Nashville because of your business, which I'm mm-hmm. wanting to get into a little bit later.
Sure.
Any favorite college football team?
Well, my far and away my favorite team ever since I was a kid was the Georgia football, Georgia Bulldogs. You know, I love them dogs, and it's been a really fun last couple seasons.
Sure, yeah.
Although I did feel like I let them down, because in the last tournament that I played, they lost to Ohio State, so I felt like somehow I had let the pretend dogs down. I don't know, but
well, hey, you know what? It happens, and that's the beauty about that. Anything can happen yeah. on any given day. But I actually grew up in Florida, though, did you not? So how did you become yes. a Bulldog fan when I'm sure you had a lot of Gator well, and Seminole fans down there?
Well, that's a story of family dynamic right there. You know, my family were all big Florida fans, and I love my family, but I'm sure in an immature 6-year-old way of wanting to carve out some space that was mine, I decided when I was 6 that I was just going to root for the Georgia Bulldogs. And there's pictures of me at age 6 where I'm all dressed out in you know in Georgia swag, and then when Herschel Walker and you know the rest of the team won the national championship in 1980, I was just there was no coming back after that. I've been a devout Georgia fan ever since, you know.
Yeah, well, that's when you can come up at 6 years old and come up with a team, that's some pretty good stuff right there. I know that when I was a kid, I was about maybe 11 or 12, I became a UCLA basketball fan, and my friends were looking at me like I was crazy. And UCLA, they play in California. We hardly ever get to see them on TV, but man, I was so enamored with their history and they were just becoming a great basketball power, and I couldn't get enough of it. And still to this day, I'm a huge fan.
The heart loves who the heart loves, you know.
That's right. So, that's right. Yeah. You can't help who you fall in love with. That's exactly
that's right.
That's exactly right. You've lived in a few places, like I said. Now in baseball, I understand you're a big Braves fan. Explain how that came out. Obviously Georgia, maybe that was.
Well, I guess, you know, when I was a kid, the Braves weren't, they had their moments. They had a few years where, know, they looked like they were gonna, do okay. But, they were the South's team. They were on WTBS. They were pretty easy to, to follow. And one year, I think where it really took hold, one year when I was in junior high school, I got sick in the middle of the school year, but it coincided with the, opening day, and I had to stay home for like 2 weeks, and I watched the Braves every single day on TV. And I just all of a sudden, Biff Pocaroba, Rafael Ramirez, all those guys, it all just made even more sense, even though I rooted for the Braves before, but then I became, pretty big fanatic. So still my team.
Still your team, the Atlanta Braves. Well, they've done well for themselves. And I know you mentioned in your tournament, Georgia was beaten by Ohio State. Now, Ohio's kind of is part of your life story too, because I understand you have family roots in Ohio. I'm from Cincinnati, so talk about that.
Yeah, my family on my dad's side dates back to, my grandparents are from the eastern part of Cuba, and Macias is Hispanic. So I wound up going to Ohio because the Bacardi family, who was very generous in terms of, granting promising students, scholarship money and things like that, paid for my grandfather to go to Case Western Reserve in Cleveland in the 20s. And so that's just sort of where, out of college, he got a job, in the area, set for my grandmother from Cuba, and they just settled in Ohio. And so my, obviously my, that's where my mom grew up as well. And So that's Cleveland is my, but weirdly, I've only been there like a few times, and I've never really sort of gone down the rabbit hole of you know, Ohio sports teams. I've got nothing against Ohio State. One of my best friends is a huge Ohio State fan, so I, you know, sometimes if I don't have a rooting interest, I know it'll make him happy, so I'll root for Ohio State. But I have no. I didn't retain any Ohio. There's no Ohio like sports DNA floating around in me anywhere. So
very diplomatic about the Ohio State thing. I'm not an Ohio State fan, so you don't have to worry about me.
No. It's okay. You know, it's all right.
Now you had to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when you were up in Cleveland a few times, or was it there when you were visiting?
It was there, but I have never been there. Weirdly, given what I do for a living, I don't have an explanation for that. I think I just haven't spent that much time in Cleveland, to be honest. So.
That's a good enough reason. And that's what I kind of want to get into next, because I try to find interesting stories with all of my guests, you know, outside of Appa too, because everybody has a life outside of Appa. Well, some of us do, some of us don't, but I try to get to that. And you really have a very interesting business that you were the founder of. And kind of talk to us about that. And remember, now you're talking to the Appa community who, you know, these are sports lunatics. So kind of try to talk to us like we're 5 years old about your business so we can understand it.
Well, fair enough. Well, in growing up, sports was not my only passion. I was very passionate about music as well. And, you know, every bit of allowance that I would earn, I'd spend on records at Christmas. I'd always want, in addition to, you know, the latest top set or, you know, box of cards, I would want, you know, the Encyclopedia of Rock or the Rolling Stone top 500 albums guide or whatever. So I was just a huge you know, music fanatic, and I started working in record stores when I was 15, and with, you know, some side jobs like the job I worked at the game store. I actually got that job. It was a really you know, great game store called Sword of the Phoenix, and they were in the same mall as the record store I worked in. Mm-hmm. And the guy, I got to know the guy who owned the store was a big music fan, and so we hit it off, and he offered me a part-time job, you know, in that store. But really, outside of this sort of side jobs, working in record stores, you know, was from 15 to 21. That was, you know, what I did. And then I met some label people through that, through working in retail. And then I just harangued them politely for a job. And finally, one of them gave me a job. And so I started working for Arista Records when I was 21. Hmm. And I worked in the major label world. I guess about 21 to about 36. That was really at the time when the record business was starting to kind of really shrink in volume. I mean, it's not, you know, super well known, but from, you know, like 1999 to 2014, the music business basically halved in terms of revenues. And so a lot of people that worked at labels, a lot of artists, you know, got cut loose. And I was, you know, I'm the co-founder of the company. We had a partner when I started the company named Deb Markland, who exited the company in very loving terms for, you know, family reasons on her end. But sure. Just to be accurate, I didn't do it alone. No one ever does.
You're right. Right.
So I started that, you know, a business to sort of, and I didn't know exactly how it was all going to turn out, but was to try to help be of service to artists who sort of found their way out of the major label system. They still had, you know, some audience, but they didn't necessarily warrant a label signing them again. So a lot of artists started just sort of doing their own recordings, but they needed an infrastructure to take it out into the world.
I got it.
And so that's, you know, you know, at first we were just consulting, but then we actually got a distribution deal through Sony's independent arm. And, you know, we've been with them for 21 years. And so essentially what my business is we act as a back end record label staff for artists who own their own work. And increasingly, as time has gone on, our artists are, and I'm not just going to say that labels don't provide a lot of value, but they generally do it on terms that are more advantageous to them than the artist. I think that's fair to say. And what we try to do is provide the investment, the infrastructure, all of that for, you know, for artists who don't really need to give up ownership of their work to get that. They're able to earn a lot more. They're able to have a lot more control over what they do. And, you know, we work with a lot of, you know, a lot of artists who, we certainly work with a lot of new artists, but we, you know, work with a lot of heritage artists, people that I think a lot of your listeners will know, people like Toby Keith and Smashing Pumpkins and Alanis Morissette, and, you know, many others, you know, but it's turned into a really nice business, and we're in the Sony firmament on the distribution mm-hmm. side of things. We're the second biggest label they have in billing globally now. The only one that we're behind is there's, for those of you who don't know, there's a Puerto Rican artist named Bad Bunny, who pretty much everyone in the world is number two to Bad Bunny. So in the family, we're now number two behind Bad Bunny, but there's no shame in that, because pretty much everyone in the music business is second to Bad Bunny at this point. So
I just watched the CMTs, and there's a lot of Bad Bunny on there.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
It's incredible. But what you said is very interesting, because I think a lot of people who know anything about the music industry know that back in the day, a lot of artists really to sign contracts with agents lost the ownership of their own music. And they really had no control over it. And this was a story that came out time and time and again. And I think what you do is really incredible, because you are really the advocate of the artist to try to keep their music, keep their what they've created within their own means and have the rights to it. And I think that's a great thing. And I'm sure the artists love you for it.
Yeah, well, thanks. And yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of artists are very happy. I mean, it is, you know, I say this to my staff and everyone who will listen, you know, nobody ever, you know, the name of my company is 30 Tigers. Nobody ever bought a 30 Tigers record. They have, however, bought a Smashing Pumpkins record.
Yeah.
You know, right. The only thing that people, the fans really, you know, care about in the end, the only reason they're spending the money is because of the artist and the work that they produce. It feels it's logical that artists should have a little bit more leverage in finding the teams to help them take their music into the marketplace. And, you know, and again, I don't begrudge, you know, the major sure. labels at all. Yeah. I think that, you know, that there's certain types of music that's incredibly expensive to market, and that ownership scenario might be appropriate, you know, in those instances. We are, in fact, but for a lot of artists, they don't need that, and so, you know, we provide a different way, and we're not the only company who does, you know, what we do, but we're you know, we were among the first, and we're definitely among the biggest.
It's really an interesting story, and your company. There's a lot of a very eclectic group. I mean, you do folk rock, you do folk country, you do straight country. You didn't mention the names.
We do hip hop. For if there's any hip hop, members of the Hip Hop Nation out there, we're the home for Lupe Fiasco, who's a multiple Grammy award winning hip hop artist. We do a lot of stuff in Cuba with Cuban artists. So I mean, we are very, very eclectic. Not many people who you know, who can be a happy home for both Toby Keith and you know, Sima Funk, you know, Cuba's latest Grammy nominee, you know.
Yeah they're out there, man. They're out there. And the name 30 Tigers, does that have any significance, the name of your company?
Well, it, you know, I was working at one point in time when we had to actually rename the company because of a trademark issue that, you know, we were, you know, the other company was in the right, you know, I won't bore everybody with trademark law right now, but we had to change our name. And at the time I was doing a business plan for a Dr. Seuss opera. And so I was deeply immersed in the world of Dr. Seuss, and he had this book called I Can Lick 30 Tigers Today. And I thought, 30 tigers, that sounds very mysterious and powerful. So I decided that we'd go with 30 tigers. And I'm so glad we did. It's a much, much better name. I think it's a pretty cool name. Very, very memorable, I think.
A Dr. Seuss, would that be a Seussical? Dr. Seuss musical?
Well, we'll put it this way. This was before the Seussical thing happened. And we found out pretty quickly that the Dr. Seuss state not only had no interest in a third party opera, but is also very litigious. So
I'll bet
we slunk away and never to be heard from again.
I like 30 tigers. That's all. I'm going with that one. I like that a lot. Now, you don't necessarily manage acts, but you have managed acts in the past.
I do.
Correct?
Well, no, I do. I co-manage an artist named Patty Griffin, who is a renowned singer songwriter. She's written she's won two Grammys for albums that she's done on her own, but a lot of artists have cut her material through the years, the Dixie Chicks and Emmylou Harris, or I guess I should say the Chicks now, have all cut their, her material. She's a very renowned singer songwriter. So I co-manage her with a woman named Carolyn Rosenfeld.
It's so interesting. When I first met you, I Ken Kraft kind of gave me a little bit of insight, and we've had a chance to talk on the phone once, and I'm really glad that we've had the opportunity to talk to you here on This Week in APA. You mentioned something interesting to me in a conversation, that the correlation between APA and you being a successful businessman. Talk a little bit about that, because I think what you said was very interesting.
Well, I'm very serious about that. I mean, I there's definitely a through line, I feel like, in things that I've learned, especially at a younger age, in trying to be competitive in leagues. You know, when I joined my first APA league, I was 19. And, you know, when you're younger and, you know, you're in a league and you're in there with older dudes and you're trying to be competitive and trying to learn how to, you know, build a team. But part of that, you have to, you know, do your research in terms of what young players are going to be worth drafting, but also trying to, you know, learn how to trade. It was a very valuable thing for me to be in this league and have to negotiate with men that were 15, 20 years older than I was, and had to kind of learn that if I had two third basemen and somebody else had two center fielders, doing my research to try to figure out, you know, why, you know, what I needed to say to trade Luis Salazar for Milt Thompson, you know, that's how far I'm going back. I had to learn how to communicate, how to sell, how to be methodical in my research and think about, develop a theory of how certain players become good, what attributes are you going to gravitate to? And it's all just part of really thinking through your subject material, you know, deeply. And I feel like those skills that I learned in my very early days as a young APBA manager absolutely helped my ability to negotiate with older men, because, you know, I was in a management position at a major label when I was 23 years old. But I feel like I sort of got a lot of practice, you know, talking, negotiating, all that kind of stuff, just trying to help my team, you know, be better. And certainly the analytical part, I don't want to bore everybody with how big of a data nerd I am, but I've run basically for any of the math people out there, you know, basically I've built to analyze cards, built programs where I'm basically running Markov chains for expected outcomes and being able to sort of know what kinds of cards work better against what pitching grades and, you know, like that. It's, you know, I've kind of gone into the rabbit hole, but those analytical skills have absolutely, again, translated, you know, they preceded and anticipated, sort of a more of a data orientation in the music business, which I feel like I'm pretty well suited for, I think, largely because of the skills and insights that I developed in APA leagues.
That is really an amazing analysis of that. And, you know, people don't think about that, but guys that get into leagues young, it's just like, being in an Apple League is just like being in business. You can't bring bullshit to the table because people are going to know what it is, and you're not going to be able to fool them. So you got to know your stuff. You got to know how to talk to people. And I think that's just really a great correlation that you bring between APA and the business world. Yeah. Before we end this conversation, which, by the way, I've had a great time talking with you. What APA projects? I know you're in the Down Under Baseball League, but what other APA projects personally do you do, and maybe are you into coming up in the near future?
Well, the football thing is pretty intensive with me. I just ordered the Big Ten set, which was the first one available. So how I run my college football tournament is, you know, I'll play each of the conference single elimination tournament. The Big Ten will, because it's one of the top conferences, will get, you know, two teams in the final eight. The SEC gets two teams in the final eight, and the other conferences, and then the group of five conferences each get one in the final eight as well. And so it's just, you know, thing of my own, you know, design. So I'm about to delve into my college football tournament this year, and that, you know, that takes a long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then I've started doing, right now I've started a 1972 NFL double elimination tournament. Again, I'm not going to do any kind of season replays because I just don't have the time or the patience to do an entire thing, right. but I really what I enjoy is seeing the makeup of the teams and just get some sense of the history. When was Lawrence McCutcheon a big deal for the Rams? You know, just to have a whole thing and the ebb and flow of it all, like, you know, the 72 Chargers, you know, it's like Johnny Unitas and Dan Fouts were both on that team. That's a really interesting thing. It was like the end of Unitas and the beginning of Fouts, and they overlapped. I don't think I quite put that together until, you know, in delving into these tournaments. So it's, you know, so I'm doing at the moment a 1972 double elimination tournament that I just started, but I'll probably toggle back and forth between that and the college football thing. And of course the DUBL season begins in May. And so I'm sure knee deep and all that, hoping that my beloved Georgia Grays, that my DUBL team, win the division again this year. So we've got to.
There you go.
I'll be busy, is what I'm saying.
not to mention the business. So let's.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's that.
Have you ever won the Down Under Baseball League tournament? Oh
yes,
championships.
Yes, four times.
Look at you!
I'm no Oklahoma Senators. They've won it, I think, seven or eight. But I think there's a couple of us that have four titles. I think Terry Houston has four titles. Who's the longtime coach of the Northern Lights? And I think there's somebody else who's won four titles as well, but I'm feeling good that this year is going to be the fifth. We'll see. Yeah,
there you go. You got to have confidence, but it really is a great league. A lot of great guys. I was fortunate enough to meet a bunch of them, including yourself. And David, I can't thank you enough for coming on. One of the most interesting guests we've had.
Well, thank you for saying that, and I have had a great time, as always, chatting with you and about APA, thanks for having me on.
Not a problem, and hey, come back. Hey, if you win the double, you got to come back and talk to us about it.
Oh, yeah, no, I'll come and crow about my achievements, trust me.
And you guys got to change your convention schedule to not when it's almost always during the weekend of the APA National Convention. We'd like to see you guys come out to Alpharetta and join us for the national convention. But your guys' convention falls almost the same weekend every year.
Well, I'll speak to somebody. We'll see if we can get that changed around, because I've never been to a national convention, which is. Seems crazy to me, but I'm dying to go, and so we'll maybe this is the year or next year or whatever, we'll figure it out so that we can do both. Hopefully,
I would say you could do it the same weekend, but playing 100 games, that's not going to work. We're not. I don't think you have time to be invested in everything that goes on in the weekend. But listen, David, once again, thank you so much for being a part of this week in APA. Let's do it again sometime soon. And the best of luck to you in everything that you're doing, APA and business related.
Thank you so much, John. It was great talking with you.
Great talking to you as well. Ladies and gentlemen, that was David Macias. And I hope you enjoyed the conversation with him as much as I did. So keep on listening to This Week in APA. I'll keep you posted on what's coming up. And so until next time, this is John Asselon saying so long from This Week in APA.